Hello and welcome back to The Life Hustle. I am Emer Omani, one half of said Life Hustle. My partner in crime is actually in Cork Airport sipping bubbles with her kids hanging off her at the moment, about to fly out on her summer halls to Spain. So I'm a little bit green with envy, but I'm really excited to see all her pictures online of her halls, and she deserves the break. So I hope they have the best time. I am really, really grateful for all of the feedback on last week's episode with Hazel from theyogatree.ie. We got some really gorgeous feedback on it, and especially it seems that lots of you out there with children who were previously afraid to go to Tesco's, you were like, let's not even do it, it's too stressful, are now looking at maybe going further afield and just embracing it and knowing and accepting it's going to be crazy and just traveling with your smallies. Why not do it? So thanks to Hazel and thanks to everyone for the feedback. This episode is all about a crew that I found by accident, actually, through a friend of mine, Jude. So props to Jude. But she was at an event in Páirc Cuíve, actually, last Friday. And it was a super event. Well, it seemed like a super event online. And I found this crew on it, and it drew me to their Instagram page, and I was literally blown away. And it really is relevant because we have lots of people at the moment in the city, and they're settling into different new roles in education and in college. And it is a crazy topsy-turvy time. And I guess this conversation is going to go a bit deeper than, say, starting college. But I'm just enthralled by what this gang are doing. It's two gentlemen, Mike and Dan, and they are the Silly Heads. So that's DA Silly Heads on Instagram. Get out your phones immediately and look them up. Follow them. Spread the good word. The Life Hustle is all about using social media for social good, and I think these guys embody it completely. So Dan, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
I was so blown away when I saw your Instagram page. You know, we'll go into the aesthetics of you and the meaning behind you guys using cartoon characters, because it's very impactful. It's up there. It's quick to look at. There's so many positives to it. But in general, tell me, how did you get started and why? Like, where was this born from day one?
So the Silly Heads started actually about a year ago, nearly to the day. And I suppose I'll jump ahead. I mean, we wanted to bring a fresh, colourful, quirky approach to mental health and decreasing stigma without actually taking away from the seriousness of the issue.
Okay.
So I myself was a mental health sufferer. Still am a mental health sufferer, actually. So in my late teens, I was diagnosed with GAD, which is generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay.
Of course, being a teenager, you know, I was doing all this kind of quirky stuff, these habitual kind of ritual stuff. And I knew I was just a warrior. My parents were like, you're a warrior. Okay. And that's all it was. I grew up in a household that was very much, you know, let's not talk about it too much, because
I think we grew up in a culture that was like that.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm in my mid thirties now. So, you know, I can look back now and go, wow, what a change we're after having so far.
Yes. And a positive one.
And a positive one.
So much work to do, but
yeah, a lot more to do, but it has moved forward, thankfully. So for years, I would have been suffering with poor mental health.
Can I ask you, is that something you openly discussed with your peers and your friends at the time? Did you have a support network that it was okay to just be you? And
the only support network I had was my wife.
Okay.
At the time, was my girlfriend, my teen
For our listeners, his gorgeous wife, Charlene, is actually with us here today. She's just so lovely. She calls herself, what did you say?
The silly wife.
The silly wife. So she is the silent one in the Silly Heads.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
But, I didn't have a support, especially in the early years. I knew I was worrying. My anxiety levels were extremely high. I would get very anxious about day-to-day stuff.
Okay.
And it was fine in the early years. As I said, me and Charlene were together, and that was my support. But that was it.
How did you cope? Like, did you go to a GP initially? Did your family encourage you to, or did you, was there any support offered to you to get you through those times?
Yeah, I think in my kind of early 20s, I noticed that this thing was starting to get worse. What I mean by that is the anxiety had transformed into this ritualistic, very intrusive behavior, which later transpired to be OCD. And I noticed I was doing the kind of surface OCD for a while. I was doing the light switching. I was doing the touching the handles, washing the hands. But then I started to learn how to drive. And I remember when I started to learn how to drive, if I'd hit a pothole in the road, I'd have to go around again. And one day I spent nearly 3 hours driving around where I lived. And at times I'd take Charlene and say, can you just make sure there's no one lying on the road? There's no ambulances. Just to get some little bit of relief. And that would buy me about an hour of relief before it would kick into something else. So I knew there was something up. And I kind of put it off again for maybe a further 12 months, maybe 2 years. At that stage then, it kind of hit its peak in my mid-20s. So I would have infatuated on my health with the OCD. So I would be having massive thoughts of catastrophe about dying being the main one, which is...
Worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario. And I would go and literally spend 4 to 6 weeks checking my body physically for lumps and bumps to the point I'd bruise my body in certain areas. And at that point, I think Charlene knew, and even my own family, that I needed to get to a GP as quickly as possible and get into the system. And it was from that moment then that I suppose the ball started to roll, and it rolled very slowly. Don't get me wrong. I started on medication, which was quite new to me. And for a guy in his mid-20s as well, you know, it's kind of like, what are we doing here? And I'm still on medication today. And I'm quite happy and proud to say that, because it is the foundation.
Good on you. Yeah.
For me. I mean, it's not, it's literally the foundation. I mean, but there's so much more that needs to be added on.
From a lifestyle perspective?
From a lifestyle.
Outside of medication, is it?
Exactly.
To add to that.
Yeah. The way I look at it is you're building up an arsenal. You're building up a toolkit. And I suppose, look, the medication is great. It's that lovely foundation. And then you really need to kind of figure out, it's like a journey of self-discovery, trying to figure out, okay, what's going to work for me? What are my triggers? And a lot of that comes with experience too.
And being able to get to the stage where you're looking at yourself and you're making that assessment, even that's a gift to be in that space, I think.
And it's an acknowledgement, you know, you're there in your early 20s, mid-20s, and it's about trusting yourself and having that confidence that this will pass.
Yes.
And that's it does pass.
I'm a great believer in that saying, you know, and this too shall pass, because it's just all things and moments, and, you know, it's about being, just being as basic as we can and being present. But we just, like that, we put so many layers onto everything, and we nearly lose sight of who we really are.
Exactly.
And then in turn, we're nearly afraid to be that person that we, at essence, that we really are. And do any of us really know who that person is? Getting very deep now for...
Exactly. And I suppose that's what I found when I started to build up, I suppose, this toolkit of self-care. Was everything comes back to basics. Everything comes back to having gratitude for, you know, whatever it is in your life.
Values,
the simplicity of being able to get up and walk, finding those small things. So I kind of came full circle. And at this stage, I was in the system now. I was in the system with the HSE.
Do you think the system a decade ago is very very different and, you know, to the system now? Do you think there's any improvements or growth in the system?
So, and I don't want to, you know, be putting down
of course,
the HSE, but I mean, the staff are fantastic.
Yeah,
it's just my experience. So the only thing I've seen changed, or I have seen a change, is the building. Now, I know that sounds...
But that's an interesting perspective.
So the building has moved and it's modern and it's chic and it's clean and it's lovely. I go back maybe every 6 months to check in, see how I'm doing, get the medication reanalyzed, all that kind of stuff. And I had high hopes when I walked in for the first time. I said, wow, this is a big leap. This is really good. But when you're in there... we're back 10 years again.
Okay, so it's just a facade.
Yeah, you could say that. And it's probably not an intentional facade. I mean, you know, I'm sure they're doing the best with the staff and with the budgets and everything. And there's some fantastic staff that have helped me throughout the years. But I came away from my last meeting, and it's kind of going back to your question about how all this started. And I remember walking home and I was thinking, this people deserve so much better. Like, they deserve it on a ground level. They deserve the humanity of connecting with people who want to help and other people who've been suffering as well. And from that moment, because it was in the summer last year, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was just racking my brains on how we could bring something very organic and real to on a local level to mental health, especially in Cork.
Approachable, I suppose. Yeah,
like very approachable. Yeah,
you know, it really resonated for me. I read something recently. It was, I think, the Anxiety and Depression Association of America said that 22 is the age in general that most people experience an episode in their lives of anxiety or of depression. Mm. It's a very impressionable time in your life. I would question now whether that has even moved to a bit of a younger age, given some of the challenges we see with, you know, children or kids that are in secondary school, and they're experiencing some of it now. But it's such a crucial time in your life, you know, that you should be full of optimism and excitement. Mm. You know, you're starting college or you're starting work, and, you know, to think that at such a crucial and positive time in your life that you might be battling something that you're afraid to go and ask for help, or just afraid to talk to somebody about. Like, why are those barriers there socially for us as peers?
Well, yeah, I think that word stigma again pops up into it, because it's the unknown, isn't it? It's again, when you start to think about, when you acknowledge, like, you know, you might be feeling good, or you feel that something might be up, then all of a sudden, you know, that society kind of picture kicks in, and it's like, well, maybe
we're trying to conform with what we expect people will accept of us.
Exactly. And obviously social media has a big part to play in that.
Do you mean that, you know, the kind of representation of everyone putting their best life out there?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's you have to acknowledge, you know, and we do it ourselves, when you're using social media, you have to look at it, almost step outside the circle and go, okay, I know this is social media, I know there's lovely pictures on there, but it's probably not a fair reflection on
everyday
reality.
Life. Yes.
And again, it's just about that acknowledgement of, well, okay, that means that I'm not going to compare. That means that I'm not going to, you know, try and be maybe something or somebody I'm not, and be comfortable in what you're offering if you're going to be on social media. But I mean, I think the kind of younger generation of today, with the amount of social media platforms, it is so much harder. I mean,
I
didn't have it
when
I was 18 or 19.
And you know what I loved was just, I didn't appreciate it at the time. Hindsight's a great thing, but just allowing, you know, like, we were allowed to be uncool or cool or not stylish or stylish.
Yeah.
You know, you could be what you wanted to be. There was no likes, there was no judgment, there was no clicks, there was no, oh, you know, you're, you know, there was no social status. You were just having fun.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you were able to express yourself. I mean,
yes.
I think I rebelled a lot. I mean, I had, believe it or not, I'd really funky hair.
Okay.
And I used to dye it all different colours, and I was allowed to do that. And actually, no, it's a good point, because when I think back, if I wasn't allowed to express like that, then...
Would it have stopped you if you were appearing on social media? Would you go, oh God, will rip the mick out of me here now?
Oh, forget it. Yeah. I mean, I was quite happy with, you know, dyeing my hair a certain colour or wearing a certain piece of clothing or whatever, and showing that to like a handful of people.
Yeah.
But to go out there into the masses and the hundreds, no, I would have stopped short. So
maybe we need to do that again. Maybe we need, you know, to embrace individuality and...
Exactly.
You know.
And I think that's really the sense that when we came together, myself and Michael, that externalization and expression of, it could be anything, what you're feeling, your journey, your story. And that's exactly what we've done with the Silly Heads.
So how did you meet Michael?
So me and Michael met in 2015. We went back to college as mature students
okay.
in Cloister Stephan Effa. And the two of us were doing sports, exercise and performance. So we were big into the sport, big into the gym. Not that you think that now, but anyway, we'll move on from that. And we were really into it. We found an outlet. You know, we were studying nutrition. We were studying everything to do with that and really enjoyed it.
Something you were really passionate about.
Really, really passionate about.
Actually, sorry to jump now with questions, but
yeah,
when you were going through your challenges in your 20s, were you, do you think it knocked you off compass from what you career and education wise wanted to do?
It did, absolutely.
So you came back to that then in your 30s.
Exactly. And it's a very good point. It did knock me off. Like, I'm going into my fourth year in CIT in business.
Well done.
And we've the Silly Heads. Now, I'm 36. And I always say to people, it shouldn't take anybody 36 or until 36 to do it. It's fine if it happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a whole decade that I completely wasted my potential and a decade I didn't enjoy. So
I would nearly argue that I don't know you and I've only just met you today, but I would nearly argue that things happen when they're meant to happen. And maybe you, this is your journey and you were meant to experience that because look what you're doing now.
Yeah,
would you be here with me now if you didn't experience that 10 years ago?
I completely agree. I completely agree that, you know, things like that, I'm a big believer in the kind of universe, you know, or kind of things kind
the
of
magnetic thing.
Thing. Something is happening for a reason. But again, you know, it's a decade of what ifs for me. It's a decade of, you know, not experiencing the world, not experiencing, you know, a bit of travel, anything like that because of what was going on in my head.
Okay.
And, you know,
and trying to navigate that to find your way, to manage it and to kind of find your way through it.
Yeah.
I guess you would hate to think, I would imagine, that other people are going through that and that they're pressing pause on their life.
Exactly. I mean, both Mike and myself actually dropped out of college in our early 20s.
So did I. High five.
Yay.
I just felt I was too young to know what I wanted to do forever. I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up and I'm 40 this year.
I get that. Yeah. I mean, it's a big part of it. I think for myself and I think Mike too, to another extent, kind of the isolation maybe, definitely for me, I use air quotes, the demons going on in my head. They knocked me off course, which is probably the worst thing that could happen because then I just fell into a rut for nearly a decade.
Okay.
So to answer your question, it did completely throw me.
Okay.
And it spiraled then. It spiraled into days when I couldn't even move out of the bed. Yeah, okay. It wasn't happening.
And that's such a scary, scary place to be because, as you said, we don't have a society. We have a society where, unfortunately, we have labels on things. So, you know, it isn't as easy. Well, it wasn't as easy definitely back then to put your hand up and say, I need a bit of help here. And where do I go and who can help me? And what do I do? I don't want to be like this.
Exactly. I mean, and I think the lowest point for me is, and it's a day that always sticks in my head. It was a beautiful Saturday, summer, really warm. And it was one of the best days I can remember. And I woke up and people say, like, when you woke up, was it just that you didn't want to wake up? And I said, no, I woke up, but it was like someone dropping, you know, a bag of coal on me, like going, well, now we're back to the routine of this massive intrusive thoughts. And I remember lying in the bed and I was so kind of done with life at that point. I found it hard to even turn in the bed to get comfortable. It was an effort for me. Even people say, oh, I'd like to get out of bed, which I really appreciate. But when I couldn't even, I was like, it's too much effort for me to move.
It's like your mental self and your physical self had just given up.
I was just lying there and I think about 3 hours went past. And of course, the heart is racing and it's a lot of physical stuff as well. And I always remember the blinds in our room. There was a crack of light coming through the edges and it was annoying me for those 3 hours. And I think I got up and I literally pasted a throw on the bed just to block out any glimmer of sunshine and whatever, hope or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was the lowest point. I mean, that was proper just
the,
existing.
The bottom, like, okay.
Yeah, like the lights were on, but
okay,
there was just nobody there. And I think why I mentioned that is that was the turning point.
Okay.
And I don't think I knew it at the time, but that was like the bottom of kind of the barrel.
You had to get there to come out.
Yeah, and I always kind of went forward saying I want to do something with mental health. I didn't have any training. I wasn't a counsellor. I wasn't a psychologist, but always in the back of my head I said I wanted to do, I needed to do something with it.
Okay. What got you out of that moment? What eventually got you out of the bed?
Luckily for me,
the doorbell or something.
Pretty much. Luckily for me, my wife and one of my best friends, Philip, he literally knocked down the door.
Okay.
My wife let him in and he just marched up to the bedroom. No, he literally dragged me from the bed.
Called you out of the bed.
And there was arguing and such a contrast. We went and climbed, I can't remember the name of the mountain.
Yeah.
Some mountain anyway in Cork on this beautiful day. So the day started off, you know, in the absolute horrors. And at 6 o'clock, I was sitting on top of some mountain.
Oh my God, does that not just show you?
No, I'm not saying that.
You don't have to go climb a mountain to feel
better.
No,
you don't, exactly. But
what a beautiful analogy of, you know, the power of the mind and how, you know, how you can turn it around when you get to the lowest of the low. Like, I know that support, family, friends is everything. I'm reaching out to a
Absolutely.
Network. But when you're that low, you don't want to take that connection usually.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there is a piece of you saying, you know, you hear a lot of things, you know, go speak to someone, just go reach out.
It's not that easy.
It's almost like having that kind of, you know, weighted chain wrapped around you, and
you kind of feel like a burden, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
But you're like the thing is, you did get to the top of the mountain. You know, it's a bit metaphorically, but
that's just the way it happened that day.
Wow.
For whatever reason, my friend, he's big into that stuff, so he dragged me to the top of the mountain.
What a great friend!
Great friend, fantastic. And inch by inch from that day, then it started to, get a little bit better. And of course, like, there was relapses, but I had this kind of moment of, well, you were at your lowest and you did actually walk out of that bed and you did climb a mountain. Literally.
You can never forget that day.
Never forget it. It's just the one thing that always sticks at me. And it little did I know, as I said, it was the catalyst for what was to happen.
Okay.
A couple of years down the road.
Okay, that's incredible. And you met up with Mike in college.
Yeah.
And a new bromance blossomed from there.
Bromance, yeah. People actually thought we were brothers for a while, which is because Mike has a very, very fine beard.
Okay.
And I'm attempting to grow a beard. But we're
in a shadow with the beard.
Yeah. We're similar age. We get on, we clicked instantly.
And you'd never met him before?
Never met him before. Okay. We went back as mature students and we just developed a great friendship and started working together on assignments and outside of college. We just had really good friends.
Okay.
So we went away and did our sports excellence performance. We did leisure management as well, which is a level 6.
Okay.
And then we continued on to CAT. So in CAT, we were starting to lean towards the course we were doing was leisure management, and there's a strong aspect of business.
Okay.
And we were leaning towards the kind of business side of things.
Right.
And that's where I kind of went, okay, this is an opportunity now to do something with the mental health. And we were talking about the characters and having some sort of platform just to tell the story.
Okay.
And tell the journey. So the sport in the gym kind of fell off a little bit.
Okay.
While we were developing that. And then last September, we came together, put our heads together, and then these 5 characters spilled out of our brains.
So how did the name, like, I just think it's the most genius branding. Like, it's outstanding. I mean, I've worked in advertising agencies in the past where you book a hotel room, you brainstorm for a whole weekend for a client for it to come up with a name or, you know, a concept for a business. Like, this is genius. It's approachable. Everyone can kind of relate to it.
Yeah.
It ties in with the advocacy products. It's absolutely outstanding. How did you come up with that?
So, okay. And I know I can feel Charlene's eyes on me here. So originally we had The Silly Heads.
Okay.
THE. And then Charlene was saying, well, just bring it back to Cork. You know, make
Brilliant.
It The Silly Heads.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, we're all about quirkiness and and trying to do things outside the box. So we're like, wow, that really rolls off the tongue, like, yep, that silly heads. So I have to thank my wife for that.
Kudos
my
silly to wife. Charlene.
Yeah.
The silly wife to silly heads. I love it. So what was it like? I've read online that you guys have been working, is it through the Rubicon Centre?
Yeah, exactly. So we just finished a 3-month student incubation programme.
Okay.
That was run by the Rubicon at Bishopstown.
How did you apply for that?
So being in CIT as students, we get a lot of kind of first-hand information. We see a lot of the additional stuff that's offered to students, one of them being the student ink program that was run. So we saw the application. By this stage, we developed a little bit of a following with the City Heads and kind of the products. So we just kind of went for it.
Okay.
I mean, we're like essentially, you know, there's a lot of tech and there's a lot of fantastic kind of real cutting edge businesses happening in the Rubicon, and we're a social enterprise, you know, yes, kind of coming from a different angle. I think we were the first social enterprise that they've had in that program.
Wow.
So we applied and we were invited to do our pitch, 2-minute pitch, and we brought the characters in and we got them in life size cutouts and we really went for it. We really, okay, like the passion, we really went for it. It's 2 minutes, so trying to get everything in.
Now, I heard you really went for it at the Student Inc. event in Porky Queen, yeah, as well on Saturday.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And do you think that comes from doing something you love or that you have genuine grow and experience with?
I'm very creative. And like that's the good thing. Me and Mike have different strengths,
okay,
which kind of complete the package. And with all our pitches, we try to do something completely different and engaging. So for example, in Parky Queeve, it was full of colour, it was full of energy. We were throwing baubles out into the crowd.
Brilliant.
This kind of off the cuff kind of thing. So yeah, and we do the same with pretty much every pitch that we go to,
okay,
whether it's 2 minutes or 5 minutes or 8 minutes.
Okay.
We try and kind of...
You put it all on the table.
All on the table and get the brand and get the concept out there and kind of what we're really about.
So tell me, back to that, what is the kind of mission statement? What is your ethos behind Desilience?
So what we say is the Silly Heads is essentially a forward-thinking social enterprise. So we do deliver advocacy apparel, and also we design really quirky, impactful events. And we're doing it on campus now in CIT, but we're hoping to get into the corporates and the business. There is an issue there with stress and mental health, and it's rising. So that's where we feel we can offer something completely different because of the brand and the story and... just the small things. We do a lot of stuff on sensory.
Okay.
With what we do. So that's a big part of our of our events. So we try and alter the environment that we're in for an hour and get the smells going and get the vision has to be good and even some taste.
Okay.
And again, that's a whole other quirky side of things that we're doing.
Okay.
So
and it's something I haven't come across before, but it's now that you've said it, it seems so relevant.
Yeah. I mean, really what we want to do is trying to, across campuses, we're working with CIT at the moment, and not that all campuses are not inclusive, because they are, but to really up the game when it comes to kind of inclusivity and advocacy on the ground.
Okay.
And that's for students, that's for workers, that's for communities. So.
And you did an incredible video where you approached, was it, lots of students on campus to be part of it.
Yeah.
What was that experience like and the feedback?
Yeah, so that was part of the Stigma is Silly event we ran at CIT in February.
Okay.
Sorry, March of this year. So yeah, we wanted something quirky, different to grab attention. So we said, we'll try and get 30 students maybe to do something kind of quirky. We ended up getting over 130 with black surgical masks,
okay,
and Stigma written across the mouth. We placed them in the canteen, which is the highest footfall or the highest place where people hang out in the college.
The good old atrium.
Yeah, the good old atrium, yeah. And on cue, all of our volunteers got up with the masks, put the masks on, and it just created this instant impact of what in the...
Something Jesus so is simple, going but so on impactful. Here.
Exactly. So what we wanted is for people to walk around and go, did you see, I saw someone with a mask, and then I did as well over by this building, and what is going on? That's exactly what we wanted. And the feedback then was... Basically, when they found out what it was, trying to break down stigma on campus and raising awareness of mental health, it started sticking now with the students and the college.
So incredible.
It got the impact that we wanted. And now we're going to try and improve on that this year. We're trying to up our game a little bit.
Incredible idea. And, you know, we've read this week and heard in the media that Facebook is on the decline amongst young people in particular. Mm-hmm. Why did you guys choose Instagram as your primary platform?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, going back to third level campuses, the students of today are probably the most receptive people to carry an advocacy, a message forward. I mean, they're the generation that is going to, you know, lead and change social issues that we have. It's great that we're in that space with them as mature students. But Instagram is obviously the platform of choice for a lot of those people, a lot of the target market that we're kind of looking at. So by us using Instagram and connecting with them, they're more likely to carry our message forward with them and advocate and support us. Because they're just more receptive to what the issue at hand is.
And I think recent referendums have even proved that, you know, young people are, you know, really interested in activism and social issues change, now. Yeah. And that was asleep for a little while. It was. We had the good times, the Celtic Tiger, and, you know, people weren't as, you know, people just kind of rolled along with the good life for a while. So it's nice to see people be passionate again. And
exactly. And they have been. I mean, the students at CAT and beyond have absolutely embraced what we're trying to do. And they're offering their time, being volunteers, everything that we could have asked for and more they've delivered on. So it was a strategic choice in the end. It wasn't just because we were in college, but it's worked out. And that just has given us such a platform now for the year ahead. To really kind of really inflate what we did last year and hopefully spread it out to other colleges as well.
And the cartoon characters, tell me how that came about. Because it's such a great way. When I look in, the very first time I looked in Instagram to check your page out, I was blown away by the simplicity yet strong message through each of the different sketches. They are outstanding. Yeah. So how did you even arrive at that concept to do it?
So, again, just to paint a picture of the characters, they are the silly heads.
Okay.
And what we mean by that is, you know, we acknowledge that those four characters are present and are there. So we have anxiety, depression, OCD and bipolar.
Okay.
And all those characters are illnesses that we've experienced or witnessed in our lives. So we've always said we would never develop a character that we haven't felt ourselves or experienced, because that's all we can talk about is our experience. So me and Mike with, I was really trying to get the anxiety onto a page.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, I never saw it as this kind of dark figure kind of, you know, and if you look at the anxiety character, it looks like, you know, a little boy and he's got his tangled thoughts around his head. And that's essentially what it was. It was an acknowledgement that, for example, anxiety was there. But when you look at it, it's just a silly head. You know, it's just, it's not going to define you and it shouldn't define you. It's a label. And, you know, you can look at it now and think, well, look at you, like you're nothing great. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's the kind of, and the same with OCD and the same with depression and bipolar. We do work them into the sketches, which you've talked about, which are kind of tongue in cheek to tell the story. But it's just about that acknowledgement that, you know, they will never define a person. I mean, I always say that I call them the lads.
Okay.
The lads, they've no bottle. When you really be proactive with your mental health or mental illness, and I don't mean to make light of it, but what we've done is, like, when you start to test them, you find out that they really have no bottle.
They're not as big as you've made them up to
be. Yeah, they talk the talk. And then when you try to get them to walk the walk, they just fall off into the background. And what I mean by that too is being very proactive about learning what you can do for your well-being. So, you know, movement is quite important. For me, sensory is quite big, and smell.
Okay.
I have a big thing with sun cream.
Okay, wow.
Brings
okay.
me back to that time when I was on holidays as a teenager. And by really implementing them in day-to-day stuff and being very proactive, as I said, you'll find that the lads, they tend to kind of, they're not up to the challenge.
Okay, you know? I like
and that's the way we look at it, that they are actually just our silly heads.
That's outstanding. And I just love the fact that you're on the college campus, that you're on the ground with students and making the effort to do these, you could call it an installation, you could call it, you know, kind of an advocacy campaign. But, you know, stress in college, like, I suppose you can couple the challenges of adapting to a new chapter in your education, managing projects, deadlines, exams. But now everyone seems to kind of have a part-time job, student loans, then you've social activities and everything. So I think, would you agree it's a fair statement that college is busy, overwhelming and stressful for people?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything you've mentioned there is quite stressful at that age. You want to do as well as you can in college, of course. You know, especially for new students coming in, you're always wondering, is this the right choice? Is this the right course? And then you add into the mix that a lot of students are moving away from home to come and study. So again, the isolation creeps in there a little bit. So, you know, I think students a lot of time kind of get a bad rep, you know.
But true.
There is a lot of stress going on in their lives from a social point of view. And that's where we try to come in. We try to encourage that kind of peer-to-peer dialogue on the ground on a daily basis.
Okay, very
through
good.
The products, and then the events will pop up as they happen on campus.
And I presume you hope that more and more people will come to these and embrace them and get involved as much as they can as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, really at the moment for us, you know, getting people like volunteers and getting people to help out and all that kind of stuff is kind of the heartbeat of what we do at the moment, because we're so young, we're always relying on people to deliver the impact that we need.
Okay.
And obviously
the strength in numbers as well.
Strength in numbers, yeah, exactly. And with the products as well, we need, we're always kind of looking out for ambassadors and people like that to visibly kind of, you know, wear the
be
product.
Seen wearing
them. Yeah, and explain what the product represents and what its actual function is. And, you know, just what the whole concept of that was about. So to carry that forward.
Brilliant. Walkinmyshoes.ie said that 46.3% of students feel totally overwhelmed by their academic duties, yet only 11% of those discuss their challenges with a campus counsellor. I saw on your website that you guys have a really extensive list of support, people to reach out to, places I've never heard of actually, so excuse my ignorance, but you know, shine.ie, pleasetalk.org, there were different organisations that I had never heard of, and it's thanks to your website that I found those. So do you have at the moment students coming to you looking for a lifeline or a little bit of support?
So what we do, we try to signpost as much as we can on our Instagram and, as you said, the website. So students, they would come to us and kind of maybe ask, where's the next best, where do I need to go to, maybe just to talk about what's on my mind. And we would direct them to the counsellor on campus.
Okay.
That's our first protocol, being on campus a lot. And it's a great service. But what we found is the waiting lists for these professional services on campus are sometimes 6 to 8 weeks.
That's a huge problem across I've seen primary schools have those issues with kids at the moment.
And so you can imagine, you know, a student has made a decision that, and it's a very commendable decision to go and seek help.
Yes.
And they're being told,
it's a brick wall.
You can't get that help in 5 weeks. So now, not only now are they walking away with their struggles in their head again, but they're being told you have to wait 4 weeks, and to deal with that in the 4 weeks is like, it's such
that can be make or break time for people.
Make or break. And that's really where we're hoping we can come in there. So when they go back to their peers, the ground level, there's a network there of visible advocacy, people who are willing to put an arm around their shoulder, take them out for, you know, that walk, like what happened to me.
Yes.
You know, just the subtle things that can make that difference. And while we're always trying to cut down on the waiting lists, we kind of feel if it doesn't happen on the ground on a daily basis, then we're always kind of going to be
on a back foot.
Yeah.
But at least you're doing it. I think that's the kind of the easy way to look at it would be, oh, what's the point of making a difference? Because the system doesn't match up with what we're trying to do, you know, so we're fighting a losing battle, but you're not. You could just have an impact on one person's life, you know, and a positive impact.
Yeah.
And you've done your job.
And the products are doing that already. We've got...
So tell me about the products. They're fantastic.
Yeah. So I just like the products... We have, at the moment, we call it the Silly Bobble.
I love them.
Yeah. So at the moment, we have it in our brand colours, which is that kind of light pink and black. So what we did with our bobbles to start with, like, we have a detachable bobble.
Ah, okay.
And the whole reason for that is not just for user preference, but depending on your mood, you can change the colour of the bobble. Again, back to the expression and that, you know.
Okay. So I might be feeling... bobble-tastic someday. I'm like going to bobble it up around town.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know the
days
I'm like not feeling my bobble. I'm just going to be a bit more understated.
And again, it's functional. Like if you want to put a hood up over it, then you take off the bobble and you don't have that kind of discomfort.
But brilliant.
We have our little subtle message of advocacy to the rear. So it's very subtle, which reads stigma-free head.
Wow.
On the back. And then for the user itself, just a little reminder as they're putting it on, which it reads,
I
our heads matter.
That. So that's on the inside.
That's on the inside. So we're really making use of the space on the product to try and make as much impact as possible. Okay. Going forward, what we aim to do is kind of relate the colours of the bobble to the characters.
Okay.
So it's going to give people a kind of a more specific way to support a specific mental illness.
Okay.
And again, they might just like the colour.
Okay.
But again, it's a new way of kind of advocating.
It's a story to each one.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we've had people kind of on the bus, they've seen the stigma-free head in the back, a little tap on the shoulder. People have gone into conversation, they're still no friends. They disclose their own issues to each other. So, and that's
incredible.
That's the whole idea. That
that's
it's
incredible.
Just that one, the power of... seeing something like that.
I saw a picture at a Cork City FC game and I don't know, is it one of you guys wearing the bobble hat? But I was like, what a cool thing. I was like, how do we get on board? We should all be wearing these out because they do start a very important conversation.
Exactly.
And it's such a clever way to do it.
Yeah, and we're trying to maximise, as I said, with the bobble hat, and we've got a couple of other products that we've lined up, and it's the same idea to kind of maximise the whole product and even the packaging when we get to that. So it's an experience for the user.
And where can people get them if they'd like to support?
Yeah, so at the moment we have a limited amount of bobble hats. We've got 200 bobble hats.
We're going to get you guys on Dragon's Den. We're going to have millions of bobble hats soon.
That'll be great. No, but CAT kindly gave us some funding to kind of run this campaign across campus this year.
Brilliant.
And that was for the 200 bobble hats. So the dates, they'll be available on campus in CAT throughout the year at specific events.
Okay, which we can see from your Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram page. So actually after today, I'm gonna meet with a student union in CAT. We're going to finalise the dates, so they'll be all up on the Instagram and people know where they can get the bobble hat.
So by the time this podcast goes out, people will be able to find that on your website or online?
Yeah, they should have it on there, on our Instagram, on our Facebook as well. And
fantastic.
We'll put it up on the website as well, yeah.
Amazing. Brilliant. And can I ask about, to kind of wrap it all up, your own journey? How are you feeling now with where you are in your career? And do you now, in hindsight, you know, think things worked out the way they were supposed to work out?
Oh, yeah. It's the happiest. It's been the happiest, you know, couple of years of my life. It took a while to get there, which I've touched on. But, you know, working in something that you're passionate about, it doesn't feel like work. You know what I mean? Like, going back to the day I found it hard to move in the bed. I now can't wait to get up. So if I wake in the middle of the night at 4, I'm like, well, that's great. I'm up at 4. Now I can start my day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the message that I really want to send home, is that a bit like cars on a motorway, they come down, you acknowledge them, and they pass the other side. And that's exactly what...
We say that for clouds, myself and Viv, that, like, know, if a bad day comes or a really crap time in your life happens, pop it in that cloud, sit with it. It's okay. That's normal. You know,
absolutely.
Let it be. Let it have its time, but it will pass.
Like, it will pass. And I know it's a cliche,
cars,
but...
That's a great one. Great one.
You know, it does pass. As I said, you know, whatever your silly head is... You know, if you be proactive about it, and if you really, really make a commitment to tackle it, then you, as I said, you find out they're just not up to the challenge, and you'll be able to manage that. I mean, I've used my OCD and anxiety now. I've actually like harnessed it. You know, I can use that work ethic and be specific about what I want to do, what we want to do with the products. But there's a point where I go, that's too much.
So you have your boundary.
I have the boundary,
your own boundaries.
And I know that boundary. So I've almost kind of use it as a booster to kind of drive on to work and everything.
And you know, if you were to look at the bigger picture, the world is made up of all of us beings, and we all have our own quirks, we all have our own challenges, but you know, we're not meant to be the same. We are, as you said, we're meant to have these different things.
Yeah.
And we can label them a negative thing or a positive thing, but we're meant to have these different, you know, parts to our personality that will make us have our own little impact while we're here on this planet and do our own little thing. And you're very much doing that now.
Exactly. And I think you just, like, you're spot on. If you can be comfortable in embracing
who you are,
well, you know what, if it is a mental illness, if it's maybe physical, if you embrace that, you truly are unique, and you can really inspire people. And that's what we found, that, you know, you can really start to change people's outlook on life. And we're trying to do that at a crucial stage of people's lives, obviously in college. So yeah, very happy.
It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And Charlene, thank you for joining us as well. The silly wife. We're going to be the silly friends now, I think. The silly groupies, me and Viv.
Very good branding, yeah.
So we can't wait to see what events you have coming up. We're totally going to try and come along to some of them and get involved, because it's such a great idea. And this is something I could see, as you said, rolled out across corporate, across schools, and it should be. It's very much needed. To wrap up, one thing stood out to me the most on your website, and I really, you know, we have all had our ups and downs and our own experiences, and this really resonated for me, and I wrote it down because I'm going to keep it in my wallet and look at it every now and then when I need to remind myself. But to quote your website, our experiences don't define us. That's
simple.
Simples.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Daniel, thank you so much, and we look forward to meeting your partner in crime as well in the next couple of weeks at your next event. I'm sure Viv is going to be so excited as well. If anyone wants to reach out to you can contact you through Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram at The City Heads, Da City Heads on Facebook, www.thecityheads.com.
Brilliant.
We're on LinkedIn as well, The City Heads. That's just a new platform that we're engaging with. So yeah, absolutely, reach out. Just we're very easygoing.
And if you see these guys around campus, get involved, get on board, get your bobble hat on, and join the movement. I love it.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Thanks, Charlene. Head over to redextra.ie, where you can see all of the content over there, from podcasts to live videos to show recordings. It's absolutely brilliant. I really do love kind of hanging out over there quite a lot during the day online. So you'll find all of our episodes over there as well. So that's redextra.ie. And thank you to Red FM for housing our podcast as usual.